All stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Today I want to speak directly to people who are on the verge of losing their minds, who see no hope, who see the spiraling down of our society and are willfully taking part in it. To all of those participants of the lunacy, I'm speaking to you today. And to the warrior cast of men and women, I hope that I can provide some uplifting words and some motivation. If not, maybe then I can give you some wise words to fall back on for these troubling times. Wisdom is going to be greatly sought after, as much as bread and water during these times. There's a difference with philosophy and waxing poetically, deep thinking, going into meditation over your words and your thoughts. I'm a man who practices stoicism, so I try to be the master of my own thoughts, my own words. But I'm going to give you some examples of people who have not been taught how to secure their mouths, and because of that, they are unsecuring our future. Here's one of the examples.
But Dad, please know that while I'm grateful and highly aware of all that you've given this family, I still don't miss you. When you died, I felt like there was a hole. I missed something, but it wasn't you. It was the idea of what you could become. I miss being able to hope and wish that one day you turn a corner and see the world from my perspective. I miss the idea that one day you might help me fight for the things that matter. I missed my fantasy of you. Because when you died, it solidified the fact that you'll never be what you could have been, but only what you are. And what you are is a racist, misogynistic, xenophobic, Trump-loving, cis-straight white man. That is all you will ever be to me. And Dad, before you tell me to respect the dead, please remember that you disrespected and disregarded the lives and deaths of entire communities of people with your ideology. You told me to never back down, so I won't. You know for a fact that even against you, I'm not afraid to share my peace. You are everything I aspire not to be, and I refuse to stand up here and sing the praises of a man who is the paradigm of white supremacy. So I'll take your racist mindset, I'll take your money, and I'll take your advice. And I swear to God I will make this world a better place, not at all because of you, but in exact opposition to you.
Thank you. All right. Rule number one. Your power lies in your ability to control your emotions. Once someone has command over your inner world, they become your master. When someone has command of your faculties through just cognitive dissonance alone, they can convince great populations to commit great atrocities. They can convince people to damage historically their nation, their religion, their self-image, their family ties. As we heard from this young woman, she's a biracial teenager, and you can tell her teenager attitude when she gets upset. She starts to talk fast. I've dealt with this many times in law enforcement. They just want to get their word in, so they speak very fast. And even though sometimes they can be eloquent, even though sometimes they can throw a couple sentences together, they rarely stop to think about the emotions coming out of the mouth and trying to combat that demon in their head. The problem with loose lips is that sometimes you just can't sew them up tight enough to keep the emotions at bay. One thing you should always be careful of is whenever you're speaking publicly, especially at your father's eulogy, like this young lady was, and you dare decide to say the atrocious things that this young woman has about her own father based off of politics. The problem becomes that should you have a change of heart, you will now have to convince every member of that audience and everyone who has listened to this video, because I found this on Libs of TikTok. You'll now have to convince the world of your new point of view. And many of those who did support you will now be against you. See, the problem with the leftist media, the problem with communism, socialism, the destruction of the child, destruction of the family, is that, as in the Bible has told us, there will come a day when a man's own enemies will be from his household. And listening to the garbage that is being spewed by the politicians, by the big tech, by the whimsical philosophers that are sitting at your universities teaching your children to become nothing more than infidels, reprobates, and heretics, the problem really becomes this. The child is so easily manipulated and molded that it doesn't take long for that child to perfect the image that her masters want her to portray. And then from there, she is propped up and used as a political stunt, but a political tool for other children to be manipulated with, for other children to then be used in a diabolical scheme that we see across the United States to destroy the inner workings of the family, to destroy any virtues of Christianity. Listen to the things this child rattled off. It's nothing different than what she has been told by mainstream media, by the White House electives, by her college, by her high school, by the idiots on social media. But did this child ever pick up a book? I have been reading one of the latest books I've been picked up and have started reading since I'm done with Gates of Fire for, I think, the 37th time that I've read this book. The Philosophy of Aristotle is the newest venture that I'm on. It is definitely a book that will put you to sleep if you do not enjoy metaphysics, logic, physics, psychology, ethics, politics, or poetics. So, for all you out there who want to be an intellectual, The Philosophy of Aristotle, it's a good book. Instead of having things like this in the library, instead of having classic Greek literature, in other classic forms of literature, we have social media. We have men pretending to be children, female children almost always as well. And then we have women who are cutting their breasts off, cutting their hair off, taking hormonal supplements to grow facial hair, and then saying they're a guy. But yet, as strange as this is, I haven't seen one of those females try and fight in the UFC yet in the men's division, but I've seen a couple of the men decide to become, quote, women and walk into the female division and utterly break people. That is your reprobate world. All right, lesson number two. Protect your reputation at all costs. When it is strong, your rivals will seldom challenge you. When it is weak, attacks will come from all corners. Ergo, Alex Jones. Alex Jones has asked to be reinstated on Twitter. I believe thousands of people at this point in time are rallying to Alex Jones to be reinstated on Twitter. And Elon Musk, the new owner of the social media giant, says that Alex Jones will not be reinstated. Now, I want to read to you why he said he will not be reinstated. Elon Musk said that my firstborn child died in my arms. I felt his last heartbeat. I have no mercy for anyone who would use the deaths of children for gain, politics, or fame. But yet, I, like so many others that are rallying to Alex Jones, will tell Mr. Musk, your views are flawed. You now have control of a platform where people can get the word out, can speak openly, and can combat this crazy leftist woke mob that you now are taking the lantern to shine the light upon the world with your opinions that are speaking out against the Democrats and the leftists. Alex Jones has become a pariah within the mainstream media, and that's fine. But that man stayed true to his word for over 20 years now. Alex Jones may have said some foolish things here and there. Haven't we all? I will say this. His conspiracy theories, quote, conspiracy theories, have almost all came out to be true. This man has red-pilled more people in the United States than Trump ever did, than almost anybody ever did. Alex Jones started the movement that we call MAGA today. That was him. That was InfoWars. That was his empire that he's built, that the left wing has completely decided to collapse down upon. And now you see the full weight of what the government can do. Alex Jones is bankrupt. I can tell the man is manic. I can see his depression. I can feel his frustration and his anger. And I have pity for Alex Jones. I like Alex Jones. I caught flack for many years for listening to InfoWars while I was at work. That's one of the things that cops don't look too positively at. Because then they label you as the conspiracy theorist because you're listening to the king of all conspiracy theorists. What's funny is, with my years of listening to Alex Jones openly, I red-pilled quite a few people and almost never had to say a word, just let Alex speak. Now, I don't agree with everything that Alex Jones says. I don't agree with all of his stunts. I think he's funny. I think he annoys people, and I think that's all right. But as long as someone on his level is taking the fight to the enemy, why should we not rally around him, Elon? You know, occasionally Elon will leave us a very funny joke on Twitter, a very funny meme against somebody. Alex Jones is literally using every penny that he has to put the word out of what's going on. So, Elon, I think Alex Jones should be reinstated. That's my personal opinion. But just to pull a Jen Psaki and circle back, rule number two on my wrecker philosophy here: protect your reputation at all costs. Alex Jones did not care about his reputation, so he is immune to it. However, Elon, you care about your reputation. You told us about your infant that died in your arms. You felt his last heartbeat. It's very sad. And I sympathize. I've been in similar moments in my life where I've had people die in my arms, So I do feel the emotional pain that you carry, but you harbor evil on your Twitter whenever you do not sanitize the language of Big Pharma or the DOD or politicians who all profit off the backs of men and women within the workforce who have become slaves to work to the workforce. And these are the same people who profit off the dead mouths that are still collecting the debris from the battlefields over America's history. The military-industrial complex, it's all over Twitter. So show a little fairness, Elon. All right, number three. Stamp out the embers before they become ablaze. I'm going to talk to you with this this philosophical statement, and I want to bring in some theoretical thought for you. This is my thesis on this, is that when you have a rebellion, unless you want it to fester like a wound, and then you want to become sick, you want to spread that sickness of that rebellion. If you don't apply direct medication, it will rot the entire body. Ergo, stamping out the embers before they come ablaze. There have been many times when I have I've lit a fire. Fire's gone out. The embers are still there. And I throw some fresh wood on there, and all I got to do is just put a bellow next to it, blow a little bit of cold oxygen on it, and the fire comes right back. That is politics. That is rebellions. That is stages of societal collapse and kingdom building. So here's a good theory for you. When does the ember become the blaze? At what point in time does it become too dangerous and you have to stomp it out? Let's put this in a hypothetical thesis for a second. Let's say in the distant future, if I was the lord of my area, as much as I want to say that I would try to use diplomacy, there is time for diplomacy and there is time for hellfire to fall from the sky. A good king would know who to send to make sure what actions needed to be taken. If I was ruling an area and I started to have little riots, protests, and I'm talking about, you know, World War III, World War IV, where we have to count every grain of rice. People don't like this, and I may be going against some people's knowledge, but you cannot allow a rebellion to spur up after you seize control of an area, or you're going to let loose the lips of the people who are going to stir strife. Strife within itself is a marvelous psychological weapon, something that the enemies use all the time. If you understand what I'm talking about militarily, then understand this has nothing to do with freedom anymore. While we live in this freedom-loving country, we have rights. We have First Amendment rights. Things that I fought for and my friends died for your First Amendment rights. And I would still do it today. However, there will come a point in time in this nation when we won't be free anymore. We won't live by the Constitution anymore. Not that I want that to happen, but that is what the left wants to happen. That's what many of the rhinos want to happen. You may think I'm over-exaggerating. Try and have free speech in Saudi Arabia. Try and have free speech in Russia, or in the UK, or Canada, or China, or Australia, or New Zealand. You may have free speech down in Thailand, Mexico, areas where the government is very, very little. But where the government is very, very big, your rights become slimmer and slimmer. Eventually, what's going to happen in this country is we are going to go back to an empire. There will be a ruling force. There will no longer be two parties. The Republicans and the Democrats cannot, at this point, last as a political party. There will be a fight, and there will be a winner. And it'll either be Americans who are going to have to rule with an iron fist and weed out the tares amongst the wheat for a little while, or it's going to be the invading country, and they are going to probably be much more brutal than what I am supposing should happen. Now, with what I'm supposing should happen, should be that, and let's take this one step further, guys. Should America fall and the flag never get raised on the staff again, you're going to live under a whole new set of rules. And you will live under those rules because we chose as a society not to fight for us to get to that final end of the road. So the way that we all voted just recently is doing nothing more than helping the inevitable end. In some ways, I wax geriatrically like Biden, and I just sit here and I mumble to myself, is this really supposed to happen? Is this prophecy being unfolded? Is America savable, redeemable? Where are we at in history? Biblically, I would say that we're screwed. Biblically, I would say that Sodom and Gomorrah probably got out easier than what America's going to get. But that's the problem now, is that I cannot predict the future. I can only tell you the attributes of history and what all these other kingdoms have suffered through. And any one of you can do the same thing I do and pick up a history book or go online and look it up. Look at how harsh kingdoms ruled over their people. This is the reason for the great experiment that was America. When the 13 colonies rebelled, freedom of speech was one of the biggest ones there. That and the ability not to have to pay unfair taxes anymore. When we as a society have finally given up on this experiment of freedom, we will be reconquered and ruled by a monarch. Most likely. Right now we're ruled by oligarchs. Oligarchs. We are ruled by divisions of people within divisions of mindsets and groups. Eventually all that too will collapse as these people will all be vying for power or trying to huddle under the umbrella of someone else's influence or protection. But we the people, not the elite, we the people are going to be the ones subjugated. So at that point in time, you better learn to be the lord of your area. So if, hypothetically, you had to rule your own little tribe, your own little fiefdom, and you have people coming in, causing problems, causing dissent, stirring up strife, you will have to make the decision of when to stamp out the embers before they become the blaze. Best example I can give you is the George Floyd riots. before we allowed the nation to be caught on fire, to be under siege, law enforcement should have took the heavy hand approach. This is my personal opinion. We should have took the heavy hand approach, and the first time a rock was thrown, there should have been bodies laying on the ground. That's my personal opinion. We should have bull rushed in and beaten everyone in the crowd until no one threw another rock. If you want to protest, fine. If you want to scream about racism, fine. But the moment that we accept violence in the streets to influence the children, like this young girl that you heard in the beginning, she is part of that influence. That generation, we're talking about some from, 2019, 2020, right? This is just recently. It's 2022, so we're already 2 years, ago were these riots, and these people are still talking about this type of stuff. They're still, and from what I've gathered, this girl was in high school. I don't know what grade, but does it matter? Where there's one, there's probably 1,000 in there speaking just like that. And the teachers who are in there influencing as well. If you know the teachers are influencing the next degree of societal collapse, at what point in time do we stamp out the embers before they become ablaze? It's a rough approach. I know. It's a heavy-handed approach. I know I'm probably going to get emails from a few of you, and I'll carry that discourse with you. Please, if you disagree with me, email me. But hear my case. I don't want violence. I don't want violence. I don't want violence. I don't want violence in my street. I don't want violence around my home. All I want to, like many other people, I just want to be left alone. But for those who choose to bring strife, and then eventually the violence that follows the strife, the anarchy, the terrorism, the mob rule, changing laws because of intimidation, just remember, you were all given a choice, and that we just wanted to be left alone. Stamping out the embers before they become ablaze. That'll be a personal decision for all of you, should you ever be aligned at any type of supervisory position or leadership position. With your children, let me ask you this much. When your children start to backtalk you, do you just snicker and laugh because it was funny and allow them to continue to progressively become hostile towards you? Or do you discipline the child? Adults are no different. Sometimes adults need more disciplining than the child does. Because, unfortunately, many adults are still children. All right, lesson number 4 for you. Do not make decisions when clouded by emotion. Wait for a clearing and then act. I would say that pretty much speaks for itself. In the military and in law enforcement, we call this a tactical pause. In the lull of a gunfight, when everybody is dropping empty magazines and inserting full, fresh ammunition, when we're trying to gather intelligence on the battlefield, trying to spread communication back and forth between teams, there is that moment where it's always good to be quiet and to listen. You can hear the footsteps of the enemy running back and forth. You can hear them reloading their weapons. You can hear the shouts back and forth, sometimes in languages you can't understand, but you can hear the communication, you can hear the desperation in a man's voice. So instead of being clouded by emotion, fear, self-preservation, indecision, wait for a clearing and then act. Take a deep breath in through the mouth, out through the nose. Close your eyes and refocus. It's one of the things that I teach my kids all the time. Actually, when they get upset to the point that they're crying and screaming and yelling and fighting with each other, that has been one of the key things that I make them do, especially my oldest daughter, now in her preteen years. Big breath in, big breath out, and focus. Reset the mind. Having that level of calmness has prevented premature death for a lot of people, has prevented very bad situations that people are caught in, turning into a life and death situation to the inevitable, you're going to die in this situation. You can see when people overreact. They let their emotions take over their bodily controls, and then they foul everything up. They foul up their chance for survival. They foul up their chance to make a wise word in the face of an enemy. Instead, they let their emotions take over. I know one of the things that I do personally, because I have been known to have fits of anger here and there, is that I bite down on my tongue and I just focus on something. I find an object, I just focus on it. I big breath in, hold it, big breath out. It's called box breathing. 4 seconds in, 4 second hold, 4 second exhale. And it helps me to refocus. I learned to breathe like that actually when I was training for diving. When I was in the military, I used to do a lot of diving. A lot of spear fishing, actually. And we never used respirators, so we always free dove. So you have to train your lungs how to intake a lot of capacity of oxygen. So we would be holding our breath, but there are times when the tension can build up and you can really start to foul up your thoughts and emotions from holding your breath and obviously running out of air. So I always found something to focus on. It helped me to prolong that a little bit further. I used to do some pretty deep dives. And there were actually times where I ran out of air, and on my way up from the Pacific, and this is out in the Pacific Ocean, it's very cold, I would just focus on the sunlight at the water and I would just keep swimming up. That way I wouldn't focus around all the bull sharks and tiger sharks and great whites and 20-foot hammerheads. I've seen a couple of those sharks. It's actually one of the ways I got over my fear of the water and the sharks was by swimming with them. Same thing with heights. I used to have a bad problem with heights, and then I started to do some cliff diving. And I went from about 30 feet in the air to about 100 feet in the air over a period of a couple months. And now I'm kind of immune to most of these things. If you ever watch any of the cave stuff that our paleo research group does, I really don't have a fear for claustrophobia. Whenever I crawl through spaces where literally my back and my chest are touching the wall, or excuse me, the floor and the ceiling, most people would panic, and rightly so. I just focus on something in the dark, and I just continue to crawl to it. One of the things I used to tell my guys in the infantry, in the Marine Corps infantry, and I used to tell my guys when I was in DHS, when we were dealing with all the riots, whenever you don't know what to do, when you come to that decision-making time and you're clouded by emotions, left foot, right foot, repeat. Continue to walk forward. No backward step. Sometimes the best path, like what Alexander the Great had said before, was no longer the quickest way around, but the best path was actually through the obstacle itself. because taking on the obstacle head on, no matter what it was, the river, the ocean, the plains, the deserts, the rainforests, the mountains, the armies, sometimes the best life lesson that you'll ever get is by just going head on into the obstacle instead of trying to go around it. All right, rule number 5. Be adaptable in your rule. The tides of change are unceasing and will slowly erode any rigid structures that stand against it. So be fluid or risk being turned to dust. My concept of if I was ever a ruler, a lord, a king, is to be rigid and adaptable. I'm rigid on my morals and my principles. I'm adaptable with my emotions. When you deal with people, if you're in a supervisory position, or if you're ever in a leadership position, always think of yourself as the king and how you treat people, how you treat your kingdom, how you treat the people who are keeping your kingdom running. They will keep you king longer if you appease them, if you help them. One of the things Alexander the Great actually used to do, the conqueror of the unknown world from Macedonia, is this king would actually stand guard at night so that his men could sleep. If you were ever in the military, you know what a night watch is. While the military, your army, marines, whatever, while your troops are bedded down for the night, there will be probably every hour, I think that's how we did it, was every hour, there would be fresh men woken up to stand guard and watch over their brothers. When the men saw that Alexander did this, and that Alexander fought from the front and not from the rear, when they saw that most of all the wounds and scars that Alexander had were on the front of his body and never his backside, it showed that no matter what, Alexander was willing to go through what his men went through and use himself to be a living example for how he wanted others to live. So, for those of us who are Christian, living by the principles of Christ, upholding the Ten Commandments, teaching our children to walk in that path as the Master, these are things that can help to break the tide of change. However, the tides of change are unceasing, and they will slowly erode any rigid structure. That's why eventually Christ has to come back. So understand that we are nothing more as man. Our fiefdoms, our homes, our egos. We're nothing more than a sandcastle lying on the beach waiting for the waves to approach. And eventually, we too will be taken down. But we can shore ourselves up. We can be adaptable. We can create moats. We can build walls to break the tide. We can think. We can use our engineering prowess. But being fluid is probably one of the best suggestions. Like Bruce Lee said, be like water. Learn to adapt and to manipulate the environment around you. There are times when you have to stand firm like a tree, and there are times when you have to go around the boulder like the water. You will know those times. I suggest that at least every now and then you put yourself in that environment. That way you can test your ability. Worst case, is you have to test it the day it matters for life and death. So bleed in practice. That way you bleed less on the battleground. All right, rule number 6. To tap into the true potential of your power, focus your energies towards a singular goal. Right now I'm building a fence. And I have been building this fence for about a month. However, the weather's been changing. I got to come and do radio shows and broadcasts and interviews, play with the kids, cook, clean, eat, go to the gym, go on some adventures here and there with the research group, do a little bit of traveling. Like today, I said at 6 o'clock this morning when I got up and I was drinking my coffee, I'm going to go start on the T-post, and I haven't done it yet. However, if I would have just gathered myself together to do this one job and not be distracted by so many different things, it would have already been done. So, to tap into your true potential of your power, focus your energies towards a singular goal. Write down your goals. Work on it until it's completed. Cross it off your list and then go to the next one. I understand at times that's very unrealistic. But you should focus all of your energies into getting that done. I know a guy who has been building a bush plane for like 10 years now. He's probably going to die before it gets completed. And his son will have to pick up the pieces to complete it. But just imagine if you had just stopped all the things that were distracting you in your life and you just accomplished this goal. You'll come across that decision one day. You'll know how to handle it. Rule number 7. Be aware of those who claim to have no interest in power, for this is often a strategy to disarm you. When the time comes, they will strike without hesitation, and it will be too late to act. I have personally experienced this. Now, one of the probably famous sayings that I say quite a bit is that I do not get friendship pay. I do my work and I go home. Now, I also do my work in the way that I see fit, not around people's emotional needs. And that hurts a lot of people's sensitive little personalities, and I really don't care. You should be very, very cautious of people who approach you in your life when you have reached a certain height of power, like at your job, when you get that next upper echelon position, and then all of a sudden, hey, buddy, let's have a little conversation. Now that you're in this supervisory role, how can you help me? Be very cautious of those people. And I would tell you that no matter who is your friend and who is your enemy, treat everybody the same. At least it's something that I can say that people always said about me, is I treated everybody the same. I demanded hard work. I accepted very little excuses. But when something happened, did I discipline people? Yes. But then I showed someone how I want it done. Or we would explore together how to make it better, how to improve the situation, how to approve a relationship between two officers who were infighting. If all you do is yell and spit and snort, you're not going to get very much done. But when the time comes, these people who will approach you during your height and power, I imagine that a lot of very successful people who reach a certain limit in their bank account, get approached by those family members. Hey, cousin, uncle, whatever. Haven't seen you in a while. Can you help me out? I know you got money. Be cautious of those people and keep them at arm's distance. I say that because you can look historically into the past and you can see where these assassins have came up through royalty and they have literally taken down entire kingdoms. Kingdoms have fallen because of these types of men who and women who were very influential but did not have your best well-being at heart. Let's just say it that way. All right, number 8. An isolated kingdom is a vulnerable one. To be strong, you must have alliances. A fortress can quickly become a prison when surrounded by enemies. Hypothetical for you. Let's say we're in this big doomsday world. We're in the post-apocalyptic patriotic zone. And you have your little fiefdom, right? You have your little carved block within your area that you are now, you have under your security, under your control. And you never go outside to make alliances. Well, there's a couple problems there. For one thing, when you block yourself in like that, you're losing valuable intelligence. Secondly, there's always another group that has a resource that you will need to be tapped into. So making alliances can help. If you're being invaded and you have made multiple alliances with other, let's say, fiefdoms around you, then you can all rally together to squash a foe. Or you can be individually taken down one by one. America used to be very good at this. Now we have become very bad at this. And I believe it's going to be one of our many downfalls. We once had many alliances. We were a fortress within ourselves because of our alliances. Especially after World War II. If you look at us now, there are nations that are literally rejecting America's pleas for help. Those same nations that are rejecting our pleas for help every year get billions of dollars sent to them for their economies. Oh, funny how the world will very quickly turn against us. Because of the mad king that we have put into the White House. All right. Rule number 9. To obtain a true ally, explain how your cause may benefit theirs. The ties of goodwill are but thin threads, whereas like ties of mutual interests are like chains of steel. When you're seeking alliances, even within your own neighborhood, it's good to find people who are of the same moral character of you as you are, but you're going to have to go out and explore that and test them. Testing the spirits, as we would say, right? I would say that your due diligence and prayer would help out quite a bit with this. But you will know your bonds with people whenever you need help. And you don't ask, and they're there. That is a person that you need to keep on your side. And expect to have a little bit of compensation for people as well. Expect to repay those types of good deeds. They can only help fortify your alliances. I always speak with stuff like this on the realms of a hypothetical situation, because it can be applied for any situation at work, at home, with family members. Even when you're out in the streets, you can very quickly make alliances with people based off of their posture. When you are in a deadly environment, like an active shooter, and you see people that are either running, that are hiding, or that are willing to fight, you know which crowd you should go with. And you know who will be the strong man that you can align yourself with, or the smart person who says there is no fighting here, fleeing is the smartest idea. You'll know what to do during that situation. Just remember, when you make these alliances, the threads are very thin. If it's just, you know, a bunch of random people, because people always have their own self-serving interest. But when we depend upon a moral code, I think that's one of the reasons why the patriotism is so big in America. It is an esprit de corps and brotherhood. I know my bonds with many other patriots that I've never met would probably be very strong. But yet, at the same time, I know Marines right now that I would turn my back on immediately. So you have to test these things out. Just because someone is in some sort of a position doesn't mean they're the greatest ally for you. Sometimes it's the worst. All right, rule number 10. Pay attention to the outcomes that people produce, not their intentions. Although many wish to do well, this does not guarantee favorable results. I know, speaking from my time in the government, this really applied to my previous job. There were plenty of times when we expected an outcome from people, and we'd say, okay, here's your deadline. You have so many months to get these objectives done. And then, let's say the quarter goes by, which is 3 months. The quarter goes by, and we call people in individually, and we say, okay, so you had a set amount of objectives that I briefed you on 3 months ago. Where are you at with these? And most of the time, you would have people say, oh, I'm almost done, or we're still working on it. And as long as you can show me proof that you're still working on it, it's good to go. You're still working on it. Stuff happens. You get bogged down. Family life. You know, things get in the way. I get that. But then you'll have the guys go, oh man, I haven't even started. Okay. There are many well-wishers who will say, you know, boss, I'm going to do this for you. I'm going to get this thing done. I'm going to make you look good. We're going to have the numbers that we need for the higher-ups. And then when it rolls around, they're not there. And I have, you know, plenty of friends that were supervisors who were plagued by people who would tell them, oh yeah, I'm going to do my job. Absolutely. And then it just never gets done. But yet, they always got their paycheck every 2 weeks. They will not answer your emails, ignore your calls, barely show up to work, and when they're at work, barely work, what we used to call hiding, and that's a law enforcement term. And, you know, twice a month, though, man, they can't wait for that check to be deposited. People like that are what bring down kingdoms. All right, number 11. This will be the last one for the day, and we'll catch up back on these tomorrow. Rule number 11. Enter the fray with boldness. Timid action is often met with strong opposition. I know that some people hesitate with physical violence. You shouldn't want to employ physical violence on the daily, but there are moments in time where it's absolutely necessary to. Do not be timid. Do not hesitate. One of the things that we used to teach in law enforcement is that hesitation kills. And I have reviewed, sadly, dozens of videos of young officers who are more scared to violate policies, scared to be videotaped, scared to have their life ruined because they made a decision against a person who was of the certain ethnic race that the entire country was coming and glued about for that week. And I have seen good cops die because of hesitation. And for anyone who's a law enforcement officer, please hear me out when I say this. Enter the fray with boldness. Every day you clip on that duty belt, you put on the badge, you put on the uniform, you get in the car, you call yourself in service, may be the last time you ever pull back into that driveway. So, make sure your boots are completely tightened every morning. Make sure your uniform is put together nice. Don't be Officer Smiley, but go at this world with boldness. Be pleasant, polite, and have a plan to kill everyone that you meet. That's what we taught in the Marine Corps, and it still applies today. It applies to civilians as well. But for law enforcement, every time we enter the fray, you have no idea who you're going to come across with that day. You have no idea the type of calls you're going to be on that day. So be smart and be bold and be brave. But do not hesitate. Do not be timid. I've seen too many good cops get punched in the face because they were not willing to put their hands on somebody because they didn't want to do the paperwork. Or they didn't know their policy. They didn't know law because they never studied. They just squeaked by the academy. And they should have never been a cop to begin with. Timid people typically get other people killed in that environment. Now then, if nothing that I said applied to you, then don't take it personal. But if I said something today that struck a bell or struck a nerve, pray about it. Do your research into your own mind if you need to, and rehearse some of the things I've talked about. Learn how to apply some of these things to your life. You know, I'm not right about everything. I'm just giving you my approach to the way I approach situations. And I've been in some pretty bad ones, but I'm still here. So I did something right during those times. Lean upon people who know more than you. I would tell you to never be embarrassed to ask a question to somebody. If you don't know the answer, you know, ask the question. I was never ashamed to ask my higher-ups, hey, I don't know this policy. Can you brief me on it? Can you point me in the right direction so I know how to handle this situation? There's nothing wrong with learning. You should be learning something new every day about yourself. You should be putting yourself through a little bit of grit every day. There should at least be 30 minutes worth of something every day that is a little bit physically enduring, a little bit painful. This helps your character grow more and more instead of being stagnant. Get up off the couch. That's where people sit down to die. We're getting close to the holidays. This is probably the slimmest turkey I've ever had. I'll be frank with you. This is the first Thanksgiving I've ever had where I can barely put food on the table. For 10 years now, I've always been able to put, you know, a 10-course meal out for every Thanksgiving. And this is the first year where I feel like God has truly tested us to the limit. We're counting quarters now just to, you know, get Thanksgiving going. But be thankful. You know why I'm thankful? Because my lights are on. I could turn on the faucet. My water will run. I have a fireplace in my house. I have chopped wood outside. Me and my wife and kids stayed up until like midnight the other night, just singing and praising and having fun and listening to Irish music. That's what I like to do in my downtime. Listening to some good old Celtic music and chopping wood. You know, it's the little things. You know, you don't have to have every pie that Walmart offers. You don't have to have a 30-pound turkey. You know, enjoy what you have, because I've been in places where you don't have any of this. You don't have the lights on. You don't have the water running. You have bombs going off. You have people dying, no matter what the holiday was. So I'm very thankful not to be caught up in that. I'm very thankful for my children not to be caught up in that. And I'm very thankful that you aren't as well. I am thankful for this free nation that we live in. I think it's worth every bit of blood that we can spare to fight for it. I hope I'm helping. I hope something that I have said so far helps to motivate you to become better, to think a little deeper. Tomorrow we'll get into some more of my rules for kingdom making, my philosophy. Be prepared. Crazy stuff can happen at any moment. Train, prep, and pray. If you feel like it, you can donate to the American Vindictus Show. If you go to www.AmericanVindictusShow.com, there's a donation section in there. I never say this stuff because I don't know. I guess part of it is like you feel shameful, right? As a man, having to ask for donations to survive. But I learned to swallow that a long time ago whenever God told me this is what he has me doing. I could go out right now and I can probably get another six-figure job based off of what I used to do in the government and doing it privately. Probably make more money. But instead, I sit here and I pray and I wait for God to move. It has probably been one of the hardest things in my life, counting pennies to pay bills. And I know plenty of you out there who've lived your entire life like that. I haven't. I've always been able to provide. I've always been able to provide amply. You know, now I think I'm making like $1,500 a month. So at one point in time, I was making probably 10 grand a month. So, you know, this is definitely a different time for me. But it's a humbling time. Spiritually, it's a cheerful time. This is probably the happiest I've ever been in my life. At one of the poorest times I've ever been in my life. And I've found out that there's a lot that I don't need. And there's a lot of people that I need more than things that I need. So, I'm grateful for all of you who listen. I'm grateful for our magnificent God, for his Son, who died on the cross for our sins, for my sins. I do my best to try and become a little bit holier every day, try to become a little smarter every day, read and study a little more, not get caught up in all the politics, stop losing my cool over stupid people's actions that I can never, ever change. I can worry about myself and my kingdom. That's all I can do. That's what you should be focusing on for this time. When you see all this political stuff is failing us, focus on your kingdom. Dig your wells, shore up your walls, sharpen your swords, and keep watch at night. May God be with you all. Stay frosty.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
Mountain State Survival covers your basis for your planning, prepping, evacuation, bugging in, or bugging out needs. They carry anything from educational material, camping supplies, emergency services supplies, food, first aid, survival kit and equipment, shooting gear, survival gear, tactical gear. They carry it all. They got it in stock. Give Mountain State Survival a ring. That's mountain-state-survival.com. Get this type of supplies while you still can. 304-517-6935. Mountain State Survival is one of the only places that I know of currently that is still carrying the delicious Peak Refuel meal that is ready to eat. It's personally the only thing that I eat at this point whenever I go out camping, whenever we have any type of emergency or disaster situation. That is the meal that I stick with, and you can find that at mountain-state-survival.com. Use Rekker5 for a 5% discount on your overall purchase. That's Rekker5, mountainstatesurvival.com. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Rekker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End. of transmission.